हरि ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare
Okay, so here's that in the Lord's plan that we're trying to bring persons from a contaminated understanding of the Vedic literature to an actual pure one. And you're going from being, you know, misapplying the Vedas, right? I mean, in other words, not following the Vedas in one sense is better than misapplying the Vedas. Right? Because at least then you don't have any bad habits if you do come in contact with the Vedas. Right? Then, so you're taking those who are grossly misapplying the Vedas, right? But then, because they have that faith in the Veda and they're attached to the Veda, but for completely materialistic means and are misapplying it, therefore then what the Lord has done is remove them from the use of the Vedas, right? So then that takes them into Buddhism. Then, because now, you know, they've become peaceful and detached, now we can adjust them into now properly following the Veda from that same peaceful and detached mood, right? But they're attached to the Buddhism, right? This voidistic. So then you introduce the culture, the lifestyle, the proper that is the basis of your devotional practices, right? But they're leaving the theory or the philosophy the same. Does that make sense? You know, because in one sense, you can say the philosophy is the one sense easier of the two on one level, right? Because the culture is the hardest. So but the philosophy, culture of the Vedic culture is designed in such a way that it allows for the pleasant or the peaceful practice or the easy practice of the proper philosophy. But it's designed for that. Right? The Vedic culture is designed for, you know, pure Vaishnav practice. Right? The others, it works, but it gets a bit bulky. So then now they're following the Veda culture, they have faith in the Vedas, they understand that the end of the Veda is the most important, right? So the philosophical aspect. But the difficulty is coming up that they're attached to this monism, right? But it's an improper monism because it's actually Buddhism. Right? So it's not technically actually a Vedic monism. Because actual Vedic monism means Vaishnav. This idea that Vedic doesn't mean Vaishnav, that means just the lack of understanding, right? So then, now you're bringing it, if monism is the medium that they're attracted to, then you give them monism in its pure Vaishnav state, right? Meaning how the Lord and His creation are one, Him and His energies are one, though they're different, right? But the emphasis on that oneness of it, it's His creation, right? It takes on His nature. It follows His will, His mood, that aspect of the oneness, right? Which is very Vaishnava and actually quite personal, you know, quite intimate, right? And so you just replace that one with the other because it's the medium the person likes. You know, it's just like the person's a businessman, then you show him how to do business for Krishna, right? Like he was doing it before for himself, now he's doing it for Krishna, but the medium is that. If someone's cooking before, just as a, you know, a cook, they like the art, and then they learn how to cook for Krishna. So what you've done is change the mentality. So that monistic aspect is the point they're attached to. But now you just show how to do that in connection to Krishna. Does that make sense? But in doing that, it takes it's Vaishnava. So it's just that aspect of the personal. Right? The Lord and his energies are non-different. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then in this way, he's just taking it as a natural step. You know, like that. So now the next aspect of the philosophy. Now we're on 16. The theory of Nirguna Brahman. So this is all with fundamental metaphysical. This is within the concept of God, right? So establishing the position of God, nature of the ultimate reality, and the theory of Nirguna Brahman, right? Because Nirguna. Then there's the idea. See, what is Nirguna Brahman? Point is if they like these words and they like these concepts, that's not the problem. The problem is they're not spiritual, actually. You know what I'm saying? Means they're spiritualists that they're interested in Brahman. But actually, their approach to Brahman is purely materialistic. Right? Because it's not actually dealing with Brahman as he actually is. They have some false ideas. Like, I want to deal with the person, but not how the person is, how I think he is. So certain parts of his personality, I just don't accept are there. Right? Does that make sense? You know, we like to sit on the park bench, but that the guy likes to go out for dinner, I just ignore that because it doesn't happen. We just sit on the bench, right? It's peaceful, it's nice. You know, does that make sense? You know, that kind of thing. Okay, so now, how to define nirguna? Because they take nirguna means no qualities, and we take nirguna meaning no material qualities, right? They take saguna to mean with material qualities, we take saguna to mean only spiritual qualities. You understand? So we use the same terminology, just they're defining it different, because they don't understand spiritual reality, right? They have some understanding of the material reality and that the illusory element of it. But even that, they don't even completely know. So if they don't know that, how will they know the spiritual? So they know zero, basically, about the spiritual other than the eternality aspect. Mm. Right? But more than that, then they kind of miss the point. Right? If they say Brahman is eternal, right? Then at that point, then they're doing okay. But as soon as they start saying other things about it, no qualities, no this, that's where they start. Yeah.
Right. So is it considered offensive actually to accept one, like some qualities of a person and the other just ignoring?
Yeah, basically. Means if you don't have access to them, okay, you don't know them. But if you have access and you ignore them, that. In other words, if it's just an acquaintance, of course you don't know much about him. You know? But if it's, you know, a close friend or a family member, and you don't know much, or you don't actually care, or you know but just ignore, then that's not good. The point is everything has a good basis. Maybe its manifestation is such, so that you know, then you understand why it's in this way or not, then you see it in its proper light. Right? So with Krishna, then all that's perfect, because he's the source of all qualities. Around here, then the quality itself may be perfect, but the manifestation may have some issues. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Brahman is eternal, but their concept of liberation is not eternal, is it really?
The concept, their idea of their concept is. But in reality, it's not enough. That's just like I say, I throw a ball up in the air, and then I say it'll stay up there eternally. But it means, point is it won't. It'll come back down. There's that moment that it stays. Then we'll say, that's it. That's Brahmananda. But it's only a moment, and then the ball's coming down again. So for a while, you won't notice it. But then when you start, when that blue ball starts to get a little closer, and you can start to make out some differences in the blueness there, and then actually different colors, and then when you can actually see the cars moving, then you start to get worried, right? You know, like that. Before that, it's all cool, right? You know, so that's the thing, is it's not real. This means they have to go beyond what they're talking about. You know, they'll say, no, but we're talking about that, but they're not.
Like you said, the example of the bird in the tree. There is a bird, there is a tree.
Yeah.
It appears that there's no bird.
Yeah. I mean, from a distance, you just see green. But if you actually go over and inspect it, there's a bird sitting there. Right? You know, so the only thing that's merged is the greenness. You know, but then the point is there's the tree is green, but it's made up of individual green leaves. And you can identify each leaf. You know, but it's all part of the tree. So that's it. God has unlimited qualities like that. But just because it's unlimited doesn't mean now it just becomes a homogenous, you know, blend.
It's funny they can't come up with some better examples.
But the thing is like this. It's just like if someone is proud,
yeah,
it doesn't take much to get their ego going, if it's not true. Like let's say the person feels he's very special. But in his mind, he knows he's not the greatest person in the world, the most powerful person, or the most richest person. But if I tell him, oh, you're the most special and wonderful person in the world, he's not going to say, well, not exactly. I am special. I'm best special more than the other guys, you know, definitely more special than you. But I'm not as special as, you know, there's a whole, no. He's not going to say that. He's just going to sit there and yes. So that's how the Mayavadis work. It's good enough that it kind of shows the thing, and so then they fill in the rest with their faith.
As long as they keep just talking amongst each other.
Yes, yeah. And so, and amongst the common person, because they're talking at generally a quite technical level,
yeah,
you know, of Vedanta. So your common person, it's above their head. So then that also is special because of that. But then you have the element that when they run into Vaishnavs, then it's a problem. They oppose it, right? But if they know more technical Vedanta, then they'll consider themselves, see, I know more. But they can't actually, it annoys them, the actual conclusion. But if they bump into a Vaishnav scholar, then you know, it's ripcord time, right? You know, it's like, have some puja to do, something is there to do, so they just, yes. Okay. Just you moved your hands. I thought it was a question, and then the hand kind of went down. And, oh, okay, no question. The Advaita advocates the theory of two Brahmans, para and apara, or the higher and lower. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But if Brahman is one, there can't be, right? You know, or if the lower, why call it Brahman? Just call it something else, you know, Shmagoogle or something like that. You know, and why call it Brahman, right? You know, but that's the problem. Is they, but they have to, because otherwise their Brahman theory can't explain the creation. So they have to come up with this thing in between, but it doesn't quite work either, right? It works well with the material, but it doesn't actually connect to the spiritual. So that's all the thing, you know. God's there, he created the world, but he's not connected, or it got out of control, or he's on a vacation, or something. Then it kind of, okay, that's how it kind of came about, but why it's run, then it doesn't quite, it doesn't, and then, you know, that. So they, you know, it's within the materialistic concepts, then you're always going to have these. Right? This theory is based primarily on the strength. Wow, that was strength and scriptural trying to be put together. We won't try it. On the strength of a few scriptural texts, there are Upanishadic statements which describe Brahman as devoid of qualities. There are also statements which speak of Brahman as qualified by numerous attributes. These two kinds of statements are known as Nirguna Shrutis and Saguna Shrutis. Because right? One is talking, God's not material, and the other is talking in the positive, God has all these nice qualities. Right? So it's not that the conclusion is different, they're just talking about two different aspects. The impersonalists consider that the nirguna shrutis are of a greater validity than the saguna shrutis. Right? For providing this theory, they use the Mimamsa principle of interpretation. Of interpretation, apacheda nyaya, the principle of the subsequent
sublating the earlier, right?
Sublating.
Sublating means like overwriting or.
Okay.
In other words, if let's say you give an order and then after that you give another order, means the second order is more important than the first one. Right, it's a standard thing of nyaya. Right?
So then the first is sublated.
Yes, the first is sublated. It's, yeah, it becomes subsequently sublated.
Yes, it's sublatee.
Yes. Yes, then there's the sublater.
Yes, that's the second order.
Yes. So the difficulty comes up then. They're not seeing that they're not talking on the same perspective. The ones talking from on the material platform, the Lord has no connection, so no material quality. Then on the spiritual, He is full of qualities. Right? So that they're not catching. They're just thinking that the earlier point makes this, and then the latter makes that. Right? Because if you're talking about the Lord, He is a person, is the first thing you're going to talk about. Having established Him as a person, then you're going to talk about how He's not like other persons. Right? He's transcendental. So He doesn't have any material qualities. But they'll mistake it that it's two different descriptions. Two kinds of Brahman. But if it's two kinds of Brahman, that's a dualistic philosophy. It's not a monistic philosophy. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So Vaishnavas are the only one that can see actual oneness. Because the Lord and His creation, it's His. So there's no difference.
Yeah.
Right? So only on the personal level can you actually see that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But so for them, though they claim to be monists, they say everything is one, but to prove that, they have to show that everything is two.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's the difficulty. So they're not actually real. Right? You know? But they've given it the college try, right? You know, like that. But. Vedanta Deshika points out that instead of apacheta nyaya in this case, another principle of interpretation has to be applied. According to the application of utsarga pavada nyaya, if some texts affirm that Brahman possesses qualities and others deny the same, the latter should be understood to mean the denial of the qualities other than those mentioned in the former. Right? So it's another aspect, not that one supplements the other, because it's not actually talking on the same point. Is that the one, since it's there, and the other is there, they can't contradict. Right? So therefore, it's talking about qualities that weren't already described. Right? So those remain in place. So all the qualities are defined that the Lord has. Then the other ones are saying He doesn't, it's not on that. It has to be on a separate, it's what He doesn't have. So He doesn't have material. Does that make sense? You know, in other words, let's say I give an order, you cook lunch, and then I say, cook a particular preparation. Now, according to the first nyaya, it means I won't cook lunch, I'll only cook that one preparation. Right? But by the second nyaya, it means I'll cook lunch, and within cooking lunch, I'll cook this specific preparation. Right? So that's he's pointing out is the difference here. Though you could argue both, but in reality, in practice, it
makes more sense.
Yeah, it makes more sense. In other words, the implication of the negative text is that Brahman is devoid of such inauspicious attributes, such as changes, karma, etc., but not that it is devoid of all characteristics. Such an interpretation, though it restricts the import of the negative text to some extent, maintains the validity of both the saguna and nirguna texts. Right? Because you could say, well, the one keeps it in its full form. The other one restricts it only to the description within the material. But if you use the one, means so you could say you're restricting the scriptures. But the point is then you're negating it if you use the other point of logic. Because the other one you're saying is totally not true.
Yeah.
Right? So in other words, you end up with one and a half.
Mm-hmm.
But if you use the other theory, you only end up with half.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So how much, one and a half is much less restricted than half. Does that make sense? Yeah. As the context of the two texts apply to different aspects of reality, there's absolutely no conflict between them. And so once you've explained that, then you end up with full. So you end up with two. Right? Instead of half. Thus, on the basis of scriptural evidence, it is not possible to establish that Brahman is nirguna and that it is higher than saguna Brahman. Footnote 1. This is confirmed in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, 25:54. According to Vedanta philosophy, the Absolute is a person. When the word nirguna, without qualities, is used, it is to be understood that the Lord has attributes that are totally spiritual. Right. So this is the point. So, I mean, God's making this point. So, you know, he's not a bad one to take as an authority on godness. Yeah. Yeah. You can take my word for it. Like that. So it works.
Yeah. Trust me on the doctor.
Sorry?
Trust me on the doctor.
Yeah, trust me on the doctor. Yeah. Or trust me, I should know. Or, you know, there's all those kinds of things. Sri Ramanuja has repeatedly stated in the Sri Bhasya that the concept of Nirvishesha Vastu, an entity totally devoid of all differentiation, right? But you've already defined it as an entity.
Yeah.
Whether it be a physical object or consciousness or even the ultimate reality is untenable both on logical and metaphysical grounds. From the standpoint of logic and epistemology, it is impossible to prove the existence of a Nirvishesha Vastu by any of the accepted pramanas. Right? If you actually use logic, as we've shown, it's just simple. You know, it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? All knowledge reveals an object only as qualified. Right? Because that's what you're revealing. Knowledge is about something that can be perceived. Mm-hmm. So therefore, such an undifferentiated reality as being beyond all thought and speech is a metaphysical abstraction. Therefore, Vishishtadvaita rejects this concept of Nirguna Brahman and upholds the ultimate reality is only a Savishesha Brahman, which is the same as the personality of God, the personal God of religion. So that's the next step, as he shows that there is only the personal. Right? And having established the personal, I mean, establish the saguna instead of nirguna. That nirguna Brahman is the same as the personal God of religion.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that's the difference that they're making. There's Brahman, then there's the God of religion. Right? Because religion is within the saguna.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then that has that personality of Vishnu. Right? And so he is supposed to be, according to their idea, the manifestation of goodness, right? And so then he's the God of religious. So all the religious texts are talking about him. So they're taking it, when they're saying there is good qualities, that means this God, not the ultimate Brahman. What he's showing is that you can't say that there's a difference. You know, by logic, it doesn't make sense. You know, by the metaphysic, it doesn't make sense. So therefore, the two Brahmans are one Brahman. Right? The nirguna Brahman is the saguna Brahman. There is only one Brahman. So when we say it's all one, we mean it. There is only saguna Brahman. Yes. Okay. Does that make sense? So then, yeah, I was just thinking that reminded me. It was this devotee. He had a band called 108, and he had one song where he just screamed, one long scream from the beginning to the end, like that. So I was just thinking, quite easy. You don't get tongue tied, right? You don't have to worry about saying the wrong words or something. No, he screamed. I don't mean words, just like that.
Was it a big hit? Yeah,
it seemed to be good. You know, it means you do a lot of stage diving and stuff like that while that was going on. And it seemed to be quite. I think it was something to do with the pain of being in the material world. That was what the song was about. Yeah. So.
Make sure nobody forgot it.
Yeah. What to do?
Yeah.
say.
Where to make a living?
Hmm?
Where to make a living?
Yeah, yeah. But I'm just saying it's also how yeah. Okay, so does that make sense? So he's showing that there is only Saguna Brahman, and that Saguna Brahman is the personal god of religion. So mm-hmm. now we're talking about the same person.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, is then once that's accepted, then there is the Brahman aspect of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Paramatma aspect, and then the personality of Godhead.
Mm-hmm.
Right? God is God and his attributes. According to Vishishta Dvaita, Brahman conceived as Savishesha implies it also possesses a bodily form, Vigraha, and is qualified by attributes, Guna, and the properties, Vibhutis, which comprise the transcendental realm, as well as the cosmic universe of sentient souls and non-sentient matter. Right? So it means all of that, because the Saguna means all the Gunas come from him, all qualities come from him. So that means himself, his expansions, his spiritual world, the jivas themselves, the material world, all the qualities, those are coming from him. As far as the body of Brahman is concerned, it is not governed by karma as the bodies of the bound individual soul are. Yeah, I can also say, so he's saying like, just the level of preaching. He's talking about Brahman. But he's just using Brahman instead of the personality of Godhead. Does that make sense? So, and then they can discuss. As soon as again the person, then it takes on another. Yeah. It brings up things. It just is there, so it works.
Mm-hmm.
But he keeps pointing out that this Brahman is the supreme person, you know. But then they'll just discuss as Brahman. Does that make sense? Right? So for the other Vedantists, it becomes very easy, because then you're dealing with the transcendental aspect. Because otherwise, if they hear person, then they think material. You say Brahman, they think spiritual. But you're showing how spiritual has all the qualities. You see, so it's quite clever, actually, in dealing with those who can't accommodate the personal feature because they think it's mundane. Then you're trying to establish the transcendental qualities of God. You establish them on the Brahman platform. And then, because that's there, then the next natural step is, therefore, there must be a transcendental form. Once you've accepted that, okay, God has all qualities, but they're not material, then you can say he has a spiritual body, spiritual associates, spiritual activities, spiritual dham. We see the logic?
Yeah.
Right? So this is the keys to soft preaching. Right? As far as the body of Brahman is concerned, it is not governed by karma as the bodies of the bound individual soul are, but is assumed by Ishwara out of his free will, Icha, for the benefit of his devotees to enable them to offer prayers and do meditation. The bodily form assumed by Ishwara in his spiritual abode is Nitya. It is constituted of pure sattva stuff, known as Shuddha sattva. Pure sattva stuff.
That's nice.
Okay, known as Shuddha-sattva. There are several pramans supporting the existence of a nitya-vigraha, or unblemished and imperishable bodily form of Ishwara. Right? Does that make sense? So what you can see is what's going to come up later, you know, that explanation will be there, is that in Dwait, their uncomfortableness is it's just so close to monism, though it's pure. It's not being said that it's not Vaishnav, but it's just so close to there and discussing there that it feels that it leaves the door open for them to maintain something, right? So for those who weren't convinced by Vishishta Dvait, then he'll come up with that. We see? Because the actual thing is the one Brahman aspects of the Vaishnav philosophy that's been perverted by the Mayavadis, right? Because Krishna is Brahman. It's from Brahman that all this creation takes place, right? But he does it through his energies, right? Because it's generic. Nature is beautiful. It's generic. But the thing is each thing has things. The leaves are beautiful. That's generic. The forest or the animals, it's generic. So it's all generic. That's the thing. That's why it's Brahman. That's why we say it's impersonal.
Hmm.
If you say people, that's impersonal. The individual person, that's personal.
You understand? It's not impersonal means no qualities. That's the pollution of Shankara. No, impersonal means it's not. It's generic. It's not specifically individual. Right? Yeah. Does that make sense? So it's a very different definition of impersonal. So that aspect of impersonal is then what's being discussed. Right? But the point is those qualities, to be able to have all those forms and applications, must be coming from the original. Right? Because of the element of cause and effect. Right? That's why the Mayavadis drop cause and effect. Because if they accept it, then you'd have to say there's qualities here and form and activities. So that means the cause has to also have those. So they have to drop that. Does that make sense? Right, so now, interesting here. Out of his free will, he's accepted the form for the benefit of the devotees to enable them to offer prayers and do meditation. Right? So that is because out of his free will he comes, performs his pastimes so that devotees can think of him, associate with him, meditate upon him, offer prayers. Right? But this is the same element that the impersonalist and these other schools may take, is that he's taken that form because you can't meditate on nothingness. Right?
Yeah.
But the point is if he's taken that because you can't, then the point is isn't that kindness? So that means there was a person originally. Right? That's the point, is if you take logic, it never works out, the Mayavadi.
Mm.
But they use the same points because all these are Vedic. So that's why they'll use them, but they've taken them and misapplied them in their own way. So that means Shankara himself is very intelligent, and so many of his other followers are very intelligent, thought about this for a long time to be able to make it consistently bogus. Right? Otherwise, it would be too obviously bogus. Right? Does that make sense?
When we go through it here, it's pretty obviously bogus.
Yes, because it's being compared. But if you just hear it on its own, and just again and again, then after a while, that makes sense. But the point is when you see it, where its origin is, then you see its natural bogusness.
Bogusness.
So then, or inherent bogusness. Yeah. So then you start to appreciate.
Mm.
Is that make sense? Right. So then you get the difference here is between, which will come up, I think, on the next page. You have the forms that in the spiritual world that are eternally there, then the expansions of those, or that are coming here, right? So the form is eternal, but it may not be here in the pastime where you can perceive it manifest pastime necessarily always. So therefore, you have the manifest and the unmanifest. But the unmanifest doesn't mean it's temporary. It just means within our frame of time and space, There's a time and a place where it's happening. But otherwise, then that's still eternal, because that's going on in the spiritual world, the same persons and the same activities. Does it make sense? Because it's points like that it starts to get confusing. According to Vishishta Dwait, every entity in the universe, both physical and ontological, consists of two aspects. The substantive aspect, Surup, which is Dharmi, and the attribute aspect. The substantive aspect, Surupa, which is Dharmi, and the attribute aspect, Subhava, which is Dharma. Okay, Dharma and Dharmi. In the light of the statement, a question arises, what is the Surupa Brahman? Okay? Well, this is very interesting here. Surup, Dharma and Dharmi.
Well, no, it means
religion. No, but Dharma means the nature. But Dharma means the nature you can't change. But generally, when we take Dharma, we mean the having that nature, and therefore having these duties, the particular rules controlling the duties. That's Dharma. But the point is that the reason those are there is because it's based on the inherent Dharma. Means, in other words, it's on the Dharma. And then the surup of it is the Dharma. So generally, when we're taking the like what someone's supposed to do, like what the brahmachari does, you know, the form of brahmacharya, that's actually the Dharma. But we'll say that's the Dharma. But actually the nature of brahmacharya, that's Dharma. What is brahmacharya? What is its nature? What is it? Does that make sense? So yeah, absorption is Brahman, or the study and practice of Brahman, right? That. So then the problem is we get distracted by the Dharmi aspect, you know, and then Grihasthas have Dharma, Dharmi, you know, all these. So what happens is because we don't make this distinction, then, you know, the argumentation is over Dharmi, or the mixing up of Dharmi. But the problem is the Dharmi goes with the Dharma. And so as soon as you start mixing them, it doesn't work. That's why the scripture doesn't mention it, don't do it. Like businessman and education, don't go together. Right? He can make lots of money, but it's not that it's solid education. Right? And even if you say, no, but they're getting a skill out of it, they can make money, so it's fair. I'm providing in a practical way a skill which with they think makes money. Right? But the problem is that that's not what education's for. That's a side benefit of education. The actual purpose of education is to know about yourself and the relationship with God. You know, about that process. In other words, the lifestyle. So they're not teaching lifestyle. Right? So does that make sense? So because what they're teaching will be used as varna or occupation, then occupation generates money. So it appears that it's fair to take money for the education. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the point. Rather than you're teaching lifestyle, that you can't put a price on. Right? The skill to make money, I can put a price on. The lifestyle, that I can't put a price on. Yeah, that's the point. Is the guy has money, so he has a place for his family. But the interaction between himself and the family, you can't put a price on that. You know what I'm saying? But he has this much skill, so with that, if the businessman applies that, he can make this much money, therefore his skill is worth this much. I'll pay this guy $200,000 because by his work, I make millions. So it's worth it. But I can't say that you know, the child giving that smile in the morning before, as you're, you know, going out the door to work, you can't put a price on that. So that's where it falls in. So education is for teaching that lifestyle. Right? That's why Brahmins don't take money. A Shudra, he's teaching you, you know, some art or something, he can take money. Because it's just occupational, it's not lifestyle. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that you have that aspect. Is that something? Yeah.
In the light of the statements of Dharma and Dharmiya, the Surupa is Dharmiya, that's the feminine, and the attribute is the Dharma, right? Is the Swabhava. That's what we were saying before, is that you have the I hood, that's the Surup, and the I-ness is the aspect, the Swabhava. So the I-ness is Krishna. The I hood, I mean, is his potency, is Lakshmi. Does that make sense? So the same. So this is on dealing on the Brahman platform. Because it's generic. All living entities have it. Right? Everything has its nature. Ramanuja says, so then what is the Surupa of Brahman if every entity has this? Ramanuja says that these five distinguishing characteristics determine the Surupa of Brahman. 1. Satyam, absolute non-conditioned existence. 2. Jnana, eternal non-contracted knowledge. 3. Anantam, not limited by space or time. From the text, Taittiriya Upanishad, Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma. I was thinking, that sounds familiar. Now I know. 1-1. And he's another number. Because that's not the opening one. Anadam, unsurpassable bliss. From the same text, Anandam Brahmano Vidvan, and Amalam, free from all imperfections. The entity which is characteristic by these five attributes is the Surup of Brahman. In other words, when we speak of the Surup of Brahman, we describe it as Satyam, or reality, Jnanam, or knowledge, Anantam, infinitude, Anandam, bliss, and Amalam, purity. Right? So we just generally use Satchit Ananda, but it means those are all contained here. Okay. Right, so Anantam and Satyam, we would take those as, you know, eternity. Eternity means is also is the reality. Right? Jnanam would be chit. Right? And Anandam is bliss. And also the nature of that bliss is the purity. Does that make sense? So he's using two for sat and two for ananda and one for chit. Right? Just to make sure you get all the aspects. Means it's bliss, but it's pure. Right? Means the happiness is there, but it's because it's from purity, that purity of that love. Right? And it's eternal, but there's substance. But there's substance, there's eternal. Because otherwise the two might contradict each other. When we speak of the essential characteristics of Brahman, we describe them as satyatva, jnanatva, anantatva, means that's the characteristic. Right? Does that make sense? Satyam is the form. Satyatva, that is the attribute. Because the tva in Sanskrit means ness. So satyatva means what is the way he's using this for that? Satyam, non-conditioned existence or truth, right? Reality. So reality is the surup, right? Satyam. But satyatva, that is the, what do you say? Reality-ness. Does that make sense?
The attributes, the qualities.
Yes. In other words, they're the same. It's just like truth, truthfulness. So truth is the form, truthfulness is the attribute. Does that make sense?
The form in action.
Yes, means the applied. That's the thing, is the attribute is Krishna, but the form and activity that you can perceive or manifest that attribute, that's his internal potency. So that's the feminine. So in other words, the form is the feminine aspect. The dharmi is the feminine aspect. The dharma is the masculine aspect. So generally, because why are we here? We're here to try to control and enjoy the feminine aspect, right? The manifestation. So that's why generally when we're looking at dharma or, you know, anything, we only look at what aspect we can control and enjoy. Because how do you control and enjoy the attribute? You can only do that through the manifestation, right? I can't actually control dharma. I can control dharmi. You understand? But the point is dharmi is manifesting dharma. Right? So if I'm actually dealing with dharmi properly, I'm dealing in line with dharma. I don't get in the way. I can be an instrument. But when I try to take the position of dharma, that's the problem. Right? If I'm dharma, then dharmi is for me. Yeah. Does that make sense? For myself.
Yeah. Like that statement, if you want to be protected by dharma, you have to uphold dharma.
Yes. Yeah. Right, because that's the thing, is the feminine aspect will, if you support, you assist, then you're under its protection. So if you assist in connection with the Lord, you're under the internal potency. You try to deal with the Lord's energy not connected to the Lord, then you're under the external. Does that make sense? Okay, because a lot of times you'll hear in philosophical things they'll use this tva, jnanatva, you know, like that. It means knowledge-ness.
Right? So that's where it's coming from. The knowledge-ness is the masculine aspect, or that's the attribute. And then the form of knowledge-ness is knowledge. Right? You have a particular knowledge. That's the form of knowledge-ness. Does that make sense?
So tattva is that-ness.
Yeah. Does this all make sense, or did this we just run into a wall here? Yes? No?
Yeah.
It's definitely, you need to be a bit acquainted with the grammar in the
Ayurveda. No, I mean, if we were doing all this in Sanskrit, it'd be a whole lot easier. Because then everybody knows the grammar, the words like that. Problem is English, there isn't such a... means we can explain it, but it's not inherently there. Because the thing is if that's there, it means other than a noun and a verb, right, at least in English, have you heard a clear definition of any other particle of speech in English? There isn't. It has to be off of that, and that's from this and that. You look at university grammar, and each one will say something that you have to go to the next word, look that up, it'll mention the next. So you get like a circle of about 5 words. If you're smart enough, you can kind of put it together and get an idea. So it's a concept, it's not actually something substantial like that. Nouns, you know, person, place, or thing, but now I even heard they've expanded beyond that, so even that's not so clear anymore. You know? So that's the difficulty. But in Sanskrit, there's a clear definition for each thing. Right? Because it actually has an attribute that is based on. So the form of it, there's an attribute to it. So it becomes very, very easy.
Morris, you asked the question, have we run into a wall? So the wall, that would be the feminine. That would manifestation, that would be the form.
That would be the form of not understanding what we're talking about.
But what was it? Okay.
Yeah, that means that's the attribute, you know, complete and total ignorance, you know, and the manifestation is the particular wall. Okay. Then we can get into detail what kind of wall it is. Is it a brick wall? Is it a stone wall? Is it, you know, the plasterboard wall at your mother-in-law's house? Is it, you know, what kind of wall is it that we could get into?
Are we the bricks?
Yeah, are we the bricks? How much we've run into the wall? Are we part of the wall?
Yeah.
You know,
there is no wall.
There is no wall.
The wall falls over when no one's there. Does it make a noise?
Yes. You know, yeah. The Taittiriya Upanishad 111.1. I think there's some period problems in here. Because the other one, it says 1-1, that would mean the first verse. But I think Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma is not the first verse.
Which is this one?
17. On the last paragraph, third sentence down at the end, it says Taittiriya Upanishad 111. There would have to be another number in there, because I think it's later. It means you can look upstairs. Otherwise, if need be, you can just count it. And then this other one that says Taittiriya Upanishad 111.1. So that's like there's 111 in chapters, but I don't think there's that many. There's only four parts, three parts. Well, four, but we generally most people don't refer to the three.
That should be 3.1.
3.1. Yo va imani bhutani jayante yena jatani jivanti yat prayant yavisha vishanta. Abhisham Vishanti ti tad vijigyasva tad brahme ti, because this is farther down. Also, it's not. It's. I think it's 1.1.11, because that's. See, as he's asking the question here. Oh yeah, that form which all things are born and which they live on being born, and into which they enter when they perish, that is Brahman. So, because this is now, he's already, because 1-1 is, it means 3-1 is Brigur Vaivarunahi, you know?
Maybe it's 3 actually there.
Three, but even 3-1, I'm saying 3-1 would be Brigur Vai Varu Nihi Varunam Pita Ramupasasa. He's always saying he approached his father. Adihi Bhagavo Brahmati Tad Vijigyasva Tad Brahmati Yavitavati Yatova Ima. This is farther down. Yeah, it's much farther down. Okay. It refers to three fundamental functions of Brahman: creation, sustenance, and dissolution of the universe. So now when we're talking about Brahman, now we're talking about that this is what Brahman is doing, but at the same time as there's the element of Vishnu, Hiranyagarbha, Sadashiv, or Paramatma, you know, all these different other elements or manifestations of the Lord are there. Also in Vedanta Sutras it's stated Janmad Yasya Yataha. This characteristic of Brahman as the creator of the universe, though it is an important function of the Supreme Being, does not constitute the Sarup, unlike Satya, Gyanatra, etc. And also there should be either Satyatva, it needs to be. Because it's showing that it's a Satya, Gyanatra. Oh, whatever. By the attribute or functional characteristic of Brahman. Okay, attributive. And it's the Sarup. But that means, in other words, these things, are once they're caught, are actually very simple. It's just we're not used to thinking like this. So that the actual problem is not that it's a hard thing to understand. It's just we're not used to discussing it. Right? Does that make sense? It means there's the element of something is blended. You know? It means what is the nature of blendness? Right? It means creating, you know, this homogeneous, you know, kind of thing. So that means it has to be mixed well and it has to be very small. That's, you know, blendness. Then you have the blender that does that. You understand? So it's very, very simple. You know, it's just like recreation, right? There's the attribute of just something to spend time, right? Mm-hmm. Then there's a particular recreation that one performs, right? So there's recreationness, and then the particular kind of recreation, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like there's idiot boxness. Then there's all the different shows that are on the idiot box, right? You know, or the size of the screen, or whether it's a flat screen or the old ones, and you know, all this kind of, does that make sense?
So in English, often the karma and dharma are the same word, like recreation.
That's on a good day that they even recognize. Oh, you mean just the principle of it?
Yeah. Grammatically.
Yeah. Like they don't. That's the problem. That's why English means it's good as a descriptive language, but it's not a scientific language. It's very good at the art of language. It's very poetic, you know, much more than many languages. But it's not. It doesn't have the grammar doesn't support the science behind the art. That's its weakness. Well, Sanskrit, the both are equal. They're exactly the same. Right? And many languages, they have a grammar, but how much people are connecting to it. So there is more of a concept of grammar. Like, in other words, if English is not your main language, there is a possibility that some of these grammatical things make sense. Because in your language, it has that aspect. But from the standpoint of English, it's just not there. You know, it's disappeared long before. Like that. Like that. Okay, besides the five distinguishing characteristics, six other important attributes are also admitted in Ishwara. Jnana, knowledge, or more specifically, Dharma Bhuta Jnana of Brahman. He is omniscient, Sarvagya, Bala. Oh, jnana, okay, meaning he is omniscient, sarvagya, right? That's all one definition of jnana, right? Is that how it is?
Looks like.
Yeah, okay.
then bala, strength, or the quality by which Ishwara supports everything. Okay. These are the six. What do they call them?
Opulences.
Yeah. No. The ones of, you know, the two qualities of Shankarshan, the two of Prajumna, the two of
Kalyana
Gunas. Yeah, these are the Kalyana Gunas. Jnana, knowledge, or more specifically, Dharma Bhuta Jnana of Brahman, he is omniscient. In other words, knowledge, but the point is he's Jnana, but his omniscience, how he knows everything. It's not just he has knowledge, but he is able to know everything. Does that make sense? Bala, strength of the quality by which Ishwara supports everything. So it's not just he's strong, you know, he can do so many push-ups or something. It's that everything that has strength in it is supported by him. Right? Aishwarya, lordship, or the quality of being the creator and controller of the universe. Right? So opulence is there. So we'd say someone's got opulence, but he has all the opulence. So it's all there. So that means he has lordship over the creation. Right? Virya, virility, refers to that quality of Ishwara who, in spite of his being the material cause of the universe, remains unaffected by the changes, vikara. Right? So in other words, the whole universe is coming from him and expanding from him, but he doesn't change. Right? Because someone else may be virulent, so they can expand, but they become changed by that. Right? But he doesn't. He has that potency to expand everything and still remain unchanged. Shakti, power, or the special quality through which Ishwara causes the evolution of the Prakriti into the manifold universe. Okay, so Shakti has the power by which that is what is transformed. So he has that Shakti, and he is, and that Shakti is able to transform. Right? And Tejas, splendor, which means that Ishwara does not depend on any external aids for creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe. They still have that paper. That is the original paper that Maharaj, because when he explained this the first time, yeah, it's falling into two pieces now. But okay, so Vasudev. Oh no, Shankarshan is Jnana and Bala. Jnana and Bala, the first two. So that knowledge by which he knows everything, and that strength by which he supports everything. Okay. Then, Prajumna is Aishwarya and Bala. Then Aishwarya and Virya. That's Prajumna. Lordship, okay, everything is his, and he is unaffected by everything. Right? Then, Aniruddha is Shakti and Tejas. Shakti is that power through which he causes the evolution of Prakriti, and he doesn't depend upon, what do you call it? Anything else for that. Means not that he gets this from somewhere. Mm-hmm. Okay. So then he supports the universe through this. Then that interest or attraction is by Aishwarya and Virya. Like, because you think, I will have everything, I will remain unchanged. Right, but people, when they get something, they become changed. Why? Because they're not God. God doesn't become changed. And that they have the Shakti and the Tejas. They have the power to do things, and they're independent. But the problem is you have the Shakti because you're getting it from somewhere else. So you can see is that people's their fall down from their position is because of these things. Right? They have that power, but they're not independent. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Had this for
I don't know how long. How long did Maharaj go?
5 years.
Five. So this would have been before that. This would have been when we were doing second canto.
2006.
Yeah. Okay. So 6 years.
Mm, nice.
Okay. So finally we got an explanation. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. See? Should hold on to things.
Yeah. So. Maybe need it in 6 years or so.
Yeah.
We should probably put the footnote.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You could. You could. I mean, that could have a very nice footnote. Taking from there, taking from that, Lakshmi Tantra. Explaining. Means it could be its own study also, just those Kalyana Pumas. Means all the qualities, if you want to get technical, all the qualities that this morning in the discussions that came up, there was all the success questions. They're all how to properly deal with these six. You know, that's the thing that hasn't gotten to, this conversation hasn't gotten to that one yet. Okay, the five manifestations of God. Okay, so there's the five distinguishing, and then there's six other important. So these are the six. The five manifestations of God. So now those are distinguishing characteristics, those other ones. Now these are manifestations. Right? Otherwise you get so many numbers, right? According to Vishishta Dvaita, God manifests himself in five forms. One, para, the transcendental form. Two, Vyuha, or the divine manifestation as Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Aniruddha for the purposes of meditation and creation of the universe. Three, Vibhava, or the several incarnations of God in the universal manifestations such as Matsya, Kurma, Varaha, Rama. Four, Archa, that is, entering into the substance chosen by devotees, as, for example, Murti form in the sacred temples. And five, antayami, that is residing within the inner recesses of our hearts for purposes of meditation. Right, so his original form, his expansions, then his incarnations within the pastimes within the world. Right, then there's the deity form, and then there's Paramatma.
Murti and deity synonymous?
Murti and deity, yeah. Murti, deity, archa, they're all the same. Because Murti is another Sanskrit name.
Just usually I hear Murti on about Prabhupada and deity about the deities.
No, Murti, it's not like that. It just may be used like that.
Okay.
Just because Murti is Sanskrit word.
Mm-hmm.
The original word was idol.
Idol, yeah, yeah. But Murti, yeah. Ishvara is the creator of the universe. He creates the universe in accordance with the karma of the individual soul. Because right? Each day of Brahma, the lotus stem is slightly different color. Because the flavor of that day's creation, that is, you know, those thousand cycles, takes on a certain flavor because there's a certain blend of the karma that day.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the next day is slightly different again. You know, it means it'll be the same thing, but there's some slight subtle differences. Right? So that's what I'm saying. Ishvara creates the universe in accordance with the karma of the individual soul. So whatever is that's happening, then that's what's going on. The purpose of creation is twofold. Compassion towards the suffering humanity and divine sport. Creation of the universe is a divine sport from which Ishvara derives Ananda. It also serves the purpose of providing the individual soul caught up in the ocean of bondage and support opportunity to escape from it and attain the final release. In other words, the Lord's pastimes and the opportunity for the living entity to get out of it. So you can understand the most important of the whole pastimes is his coming and performing his pastimes within the material world. Right? So secondary to that will be those pastimes of maintaining, creating and maintaining and destroying the universe. Right, so those are there also, you know, because he's creating, he's maintaining, he's destroying. So that has its own flavor, or ananda. But more important than that, that's not actually why he does it. Right, he does it to attract the living entities. Right, that's the whole idea. Because the other one, you're just doing that according to the nature of the individuals.
Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, the child wants a certain thing to eat. So then there's that fun of cooking that specific thing because it's according to what they want to eat. But the most important thing is because of the relationship between the mother and child. That's actually what's going on. And that's just a side detail. So in other words, the creation, maintenance, and destruction according to the karma of the living entities. That aspect of his pastime. That's secondary to the pastime of performing his activities and interacting with the devotees, right? Does that make sense? Mm. You had something?
Heard you say that was very clear that because we have a bodily concept of life, then Krishna performs his pastimes to attract us.
Well, that may be a slightly different, context, but it means is that he comes because we're on the bodily concept, so he comes here within this realm so we can appreciate it. But the point is that attraction of the living entity to the Lord, that's what you're trying to obtain. That's what you're trying to get. Like that. Does that make sense? Because sometimes those are very specific. There's a specific conversation, so that one would come up. That would be a detail. But, yes.
What was that verse in the Bhagavatam mentions that to attract those in the mode of pure goodness?
Yes. Because those in the mode of pure goodness are attracted.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's why you associate with the devotees. Because you're associated with the devotees and they're associated with the devotees, and it gets at some point it gets back to pure goodness. So there's a connection. Right? But the point is devotional service is pure goodness. It's just we may, due to our position, we may appreciate that or not. Does that make sense? Yeah. The question which is raised here is, if God is all compassionate, if the universe is his own creation, why should there be so much suffering in the universe and such wide disparities in the suffering and happiness of individuals? This is explained as in all theistic Indian systems as being the karma of each individual, which varies from probably one another according to past deeds. God dispenses good to those who have done good deeds and evil to those who have done evil deeds. Right? So it's just you can't see the connection. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay.
He gives us the determination so we can go to hell if that's where we want to go.
Yeah, if you want to go, then he'll help you. He'll go out and buy a bucket for you. Like just some go in a nice bucket, some not so nice bucket. You know, some, the bucket must be there.
Bucket must be.
The concept of material nature. Material causality of Brahman. Okay. One of the major problems of Vedanta is to provide a satisfactory explanation of the material causality of Brahman. Right? Because the materials just say everything comes from matter. Consciousness comes from matter. Life comes from matter. So how do you show that transcendence is how all this is happening? The Upanishads indicate that Brahman is the material cause, upadana karana, of the universe on the ontology of the lump of clay being the material cause of the pot.
It's analogy.
Analogy. Okay.
Bengalis, they can't tell the difference between A and O anyway.
Onology.
Onology.
Okay. On the analogy of the lump of clay being the material cause of the pot. Right? Because the clay, you can say, is the cause of the pot, because without the clay, you wouldn't have the pot. Right? So like that, then Brahman is that source of that energy by which is that. But the point is the clay is transformed. So that means the dharma of the clay is that it can be shaped and formed, but it's actual change, that's the dharma. So the energy is changing, is transforming. Does that make sense?
On the strength of the Upanishadic teachings, all Vedantists accept Madhva, accept that Brahman is the material cause of the universe. Because he just doesn't want to get anywhere near that. Because otherwise, as soon as he gets that, then they'll say it's material. So he just doesn't deal. He'll approach from a different angle. Right? The Shruti texts also categorically declare that Brahman is immutable. That is, not subject to any kind of change. The causality of Brahman thus needs to be accounted for without affecting the Sarup of Brahman. How is this to be done? Each school of Vedanta attempts to offer an explanation in this regard. There are three important theories of material causality of Brahman. Okay. So these are all Vaishnav, or all three of them?
No.
No. Okay, these are just the kinds that are there. Okay. Brahman itself transforms into the universe. Okay. A view held by Yadava Prakash and Bhaskara. This is known as Brahma Parinamavad. Probably be good to put here so you know what it is. You know, an Advaita view, or the Advaita, and like that.
Yeah, the beta comes to the last one.
But it's also the Vivartavad. But I'm saying, because Brahma Parinamavad is also an Advaita. But it's just not a Mayavad. The Mayavads will take Vivarta. B. Brahman associated with Chit and Achit in the subtle forms is the material cause of the universe. This view is held by Vishishta Dvaita and may be regarded as modified Brahma Parinamavad. Brahman is the basis of the illusory appearance of the universe, is its material cause. This is the Advaita view known as Vivartavad. So in other words, there's two kinds of Advaita and then the Vishishta Dvaita. Right? Mm-hmm. That's what's here? Yeah, okay. Two, refutation of Vivartavad theory. Sri Ramanujacharya in his Sri Bhasya has leveled a sevenfold objection against this doctrine. Sapta Vidhanu Papatti. Oh, that's what Papatte is. Okay. Objection. Yeah, no, because in Vedanta Sutra it always uses this papatti. A. Ashrayanu papatti. What is the locus or support of Maya? Where does avidya reside? If there is any such thing as Maya or avidya, we are justified in asking for a seat or abode. Verily, it cannot exist in Brahman. For then the unqualified monism of Brahman would break down, right? Because if Maya resides in Brahman, then how would Brahman, means it would have energies or it would have qualities, or it can be a shelter, all these different things come up. So then your idea of Brahman would break down. Mm-hmm. Moreover, Brahman is, you know, and if we say there is such a thing as Maya, right, then you have to say, okay, where does it reside? What's it from? Moreover, Brahman is said to be pure self-luminous consciousness or knowledge, and avidya means ignorance, right? Then how can ignorance exist in knowledge? Does that make sense? If Brahman is just pure knowledge and transcendence, where is the seat for avidya? Where could it come from? Again, avidya cannot reside in the individual self, for the individuality of the self is said to be the creation of avidya. Right, so you can't reside in itself, like you can't live in yourself. Right, you know, so you have those bags and you fold them up into themselves or something like that, so they reside in themselves.
I don't know those bags.
You haven't seen this? Mm. Yeah, this big old bag, like this, and then it folds up, and then there's a little pocket in the front, and you fold it up, and you can and turn it inside out and fold it inside his pocket, and then you have this little dinky little thing. Mm-hmm. You never seen those?
No.
They sell them in the airports. And stuff.
Yeah, yeah. They're like travel things.
Coats.
Yeah. Coats that do that. Yeah, yeah. That's so. If you need, then you can get it out.
Yeah.
If you don't, you put it back.
Oh.
Just see. Don't need it. Okay. Means the ghee would run out anyway,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, so buckets are better.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah, it makes sense. Again, avidya cannot reside in the individual self, for the individuality of the self is said to be the creation of avidya, right? So it means avidya has created the individuality, so it can't reside in the individual. How can the cause depend on its effect? Right? Because I can only exist once I've created something that I can exist in. You know? It doesn't kind of work. Hence, avidya cannot exist either in Brahman or the jiva. It is an illusory concept, a figment of the Mayavadi's imagination. If it resides anywhere, it resides only in the mind of the Mayavadi, who has imagined this wonderful pseudo-concept, this myth, this logic myth. Very nicely placed. Right, that's the acharyas, right? They always come up with such nice things.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. You say what you like, say it pleasantly. So therefore, my dear sir, it appears that only it resides in your imagination. Okay, beer. Beer. That's tear. Oh boy. Tiro danu papati. How can avidya conceal Brahman? Okay, because that's the other point they make, is that therefore Brahman becomes covered, right? Just like you have the sky, and then the pot, compared to ignorance, covers that part of the sky that now becomes known as the individual jiva soul. But now you're saying, so you know, that there was avidya somehow or another there, and it covered that jiva. That's the first point. So where did that avidya come from? So it can't come from anywhere. It can't come from the jiva, can't come from Brahman. Right? Because it can't come from the jiva, because the jiva is what's produced by the effect of maya. Right? So therefore, it can't exist. That's the first thing. Then the second one is, okay, now you get into their examples, is that the pot. So how can illusion cover Brahman? If it does, then Brahman is not self-conscious and self-luminous subject, right? If it can be covered. If Brahman is of the nature of self-luminosity and self-proved knowledge, ignorance cannot cover or veil its existence. It is as absurd as to say that darkness can hide light or that night can act as a veil on day. Right? Yeah. So much darkness today, you can't even see the day. Or something. Yeah. Darkness can hide the night. Light, yeah. Okay. And then footnote 2. In his purport to Bhagavad Gita 5.16, Srila Prabhupada uses the same argument. The living entity is bewildered in so many ways. For instance, when he unceremoniously thinks himself God, he actually falls into the last snare of nescience. If the living entity is God, then how can he become bewildered by nescience? Right? Does God become bewildered by nescience? If so, then nescience, or Satan, is greater than God. Right? Yes.
Why the pot gets covered by ignorance? Because, I mean, for us, we understand why we want to address everything for fish.
Yeah.
So why?
I'm not sure. That something come up before. On why? The question is, why would Maya cover Brahman? What would be the purpose?
You tried to explain it as kind of pastime.
Pastime, yeah, that's the only thing I've heard.
Pastime or the magic of Brahman.
Magic of Maya. So Brahman appreciates the magic of Maya. Yeah, they say pastime. But the point is if it's miserable that you're trying your best to get out of it, why would that be a pastime?
You're trying to get to merge back in.
Yeah, it's kind of like, where could we go for holiday this year? Well, hey, you know, there's this place out in the middle of nowhere in Australia, up in the north there. It's so far out there. It's boiling hot, freezing in the winter. It's this big mine. There's no trees. There's nothing alive. These big machines, dust, noise, everything. You know, it goes, wow, yeah, great. Let's go. You know? That's how you work out holidays, right?
Kabul's also
so that
nice.
You appreciate your life even more.
Yeah, yeah. Then you, yeah, when you get back, it'll be even better.
Kabul's also nice this time of year. Afghanistan.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Get yourself a nice cave.
Yeah.
So basically, there's no.
Yeah, there's no. Then that's all. But then, when they use that pastime, then they convert it into the personal, the Saguna Brahman, that he comes and performs pastime. So therefore, I can do that. But the point is if that's something you would come to do, why would Saguna be higher? You know, because if you want to be happy, you do what's better, not what's less. You know, it's just like I'm sitting here and I'm absorbed in enjoying my sittingness, and so then for a variety I pull out a hammer and start hitting myself on the head, right? And then I decide, you know, this is so crazy, and then I stop.
And then you're happy.
And then we're happy to just sit here again.
There's a similar problem with Shankya. They also have difficulties to explain why in the first place.
Okay, yes.
Purusha and Prakriti got involved.
Yeah, it was just so that because Purusha can't tell the difference between himself and Prakriti, so Prakriti manifests, but once he's understood and he's understood the difference, then they become one again. But what's the need of, if becoming one, yeah, what's the need of knowing the difference if you're, means ultimately it's just going to be the same? Yeah.
There's no gain.
Yeah, there's no gain. Yeah. Yeah. They're pretty wild, these guys. Okay. So end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jainatai Gaurav Premiyanti.